Hey guys, welcome to Economics Design. My name is Shreesh, and in this video, we are going to be talking about the Tenkan upgrade. We have Gio with us, who is our head consultant here at Economics Design. And so today we'll be diving deep into what this upgrade is about, how it impacts the project that are built on Ethereum, and then lastly, what are the next big steps for Ethereum as well. So Gio, without any further ado, can you explain to us a little bit about what this upgrade has been about? And I know that the upgrade went live like a few days ago, but people have been talking about it since the last 2 or 3 months, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. First, excited to be here again, especially to talk about a topic that is so important and that has gotten the headlines off pretty much everywhere in crypto, right? So if you're in crypto, you've heard about Denkun or you've heard about EIP-4844, which is the technical name for this proposal. And it just changes a lot how Ethereum works, right? So I think, just to give a context, right? We know that one of the biggest criticisms of Ethereum right now is that the gas fees are very high and it's not scalable. So anytime we have congestion, gas fees are super expensive and it just becomes impossible to operate in Ethereum, right? So we saw rates of $100 for you to do a simple transfer. And obviously when we're thinking of thousands of transactions and especially microtransactions, this just doesn't work, right? If you're trying to transfer $50 to someone and you have to pay $100 in gas fees, that makes no sense. And even if you were transferring $50 and you were paying $10, $5, that's still too much, right? So I think this is the biggest criticism. And Ethereum has been seeing a lot of competition from other chains that try to bring the scalability, try to reduce costs. And that's why the layer twos came in the first place, right? So the community saw that this was an issue, but at the same time, Ethereum is the most secure blockchain, smart contract based, not considering Bitcoin because it's a different, completely different thing. So they see that as the most secure blockchain, and that's why L2s came into the plans, right? So people were like, okay, so Ethereum can't scale, so why don't we build scalable blockchains on top of Ethereum, and we just publish the proofs to Ethereum to use that security, but still having cheaper transaction fees. And this has been working very well, right? So we have big names that got a big portion of the market. So we can talk of Optimism, we can talk about Arbitrum and the many, many other L2s that we have in the market. The issue is that even with the layer two, depending on the congestion that we have in the Ethereum network, fees are very high in the layer twos as well, right? So something that was supposed to cost 1 cent, 2 cents, 5 cents to be scalable is actually charging $2 or $3 for certain transactions. So even in the layer twos, this became a little bit expensive for microtransactions. And the Denkun upgrade was to try to solve that, right? So we're going to go a little bit deeper into it, but basically the core change of this improvement proposal, the EIP-4844, is to introduce blobs. And these blobs are basically a new place for the L2s to publish data. And this makes them a lot more efficient, right? So instead of them having to publish full data into the Ethereum blockchain, which makes the entire blockchain history very heavy, and also the processing capacity that is needed very high because you have to publish a lot of information, now you have almost like an off-chain place to put that data on, and then only put the hash or the reference for that information to the blockchain. So that's already a lot more efficient for the blockchain in terms of processing, right? And I think the other thing that comes into mind is how are the gas fees being calculated? So I would guess that your next question is, okay, so how was it? How were the fees before? How are the fees now?
Exactly.
Right? This is what matters. So And when I'm thinking of this upgrade and how this changed, I like to think of metaphors to try to understand. And the way I explain the layer one and layer twos, right? And there's a metaphor for this. So if you think of a layer one, think of a place that has a house built into it, right? So you have your own house, you have the area of your house, and only four people live. So it's your family, it's a four people family. But then we need to scale because the city is becoming too big and we need more people. What do? You get out, you take out the house and you build an entire building, right? With 100 floors. And then you put a bunch of apartments and in the same area, you can have more people there, right? So this is a metaphor for layer ones to layer twos. The metaphor for before and after gas fees, I like to think of a road and a highway. So before, everyone was using the same road, right? So it doesn't matter if you're a user interacting in the L1 or if you're an L2 and you're publishing data for millions of transactions that you're processing out, you will be competing for the same block space, right? So if congestion catches up, layer two will also be expensive and they will have to compete with users. What Denkum did in a very simple way was create a highway. So instead of the L2s having to compete with users, what happens is that now they have their own space to publish that data and to process those transactions. So they're not competing with the users anymore, right? They have a different set of congestion parameters and fees, and that is separate, completely separate from the normal interactions, right? So obviously with this new way of doing it, gas fees reduced drastically, right? So we saw 90% reduction. We saw very much what we wanted to see, we did, right? But for the layer one users, this is still unchanged, right? So gas fees on the base layer didn't change. So if you go there and use Uniswap or Ethereum, you'll still be subject to the same fee levels that we had before. So this solved a little bit the L2's problem, but not really the layer one yet, right? So it's still not scalable. It's still expensive to transact in the L1.
Right. So what I'm understanding is that Ethereum didn't exactly solve anything on the main chain, but it sort of did something to complement the L2 solutions that were already in place. So it's like an upgrade to the L2 solutions and not the Ethereum chain itself in a lot of ways.
Yeah, so you get the gist of it. I think the only thing is that when we think of Ethereum's plan and roadmap, I think they understand that Ethereum is never going to be as scalable as other solutions because of how the security works. So they understand that scalability is an issue, and what they need to do is to create a base for these other scalable solutions to build on top of them, and then users will interact in that layer and not in the base layer, right? So It is not an improvement directly to the layer one, but at the same time it is, because it's improving the ecosystem that is around, right? So if you do a transaction on Arbitrum, yes, sure, you're not in Ethereum, but you are, right? You're using the Ethereum security at the end. Arbitrum is publishing data to Ethereum, and this is the ecosystem, right? The ecosystem is not the layer one only, it's everything that is built on top of it. So yeah, you're right. It didn't change fundamentally what we do in the layer one, but it did change the ecosystem drastically.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And I think, as you said, right, so can you elaborate a little bit more on, you said that Ethereum, the people who are working on Ethereum don't know that it's not really scalable, and that is because of the security. So is it part of that, the whole trilemma that people talk about, that you need decentralization, security, and scalability? Is that like a part of it? Like if you focus on one area too much, for example, scalability, then you'll obviously have certain issues with the decentralization and the security of it. Is that it?
Yeah, so this is part of it, right? So the trilemma, I think, is a very good way of simplifying things and to understand really how it works. And when you think of Ethereum, they focus a lot on security and decentralization.
Right.
Right. So they want to be very secure. They want to be very decentralized. And then they end up giving up some part of the scalability part, right? And the next steps that we have will probably be focused on this as well, right? So the way it is now, it's not perfect. So they understand this is an issue and that it will be hard for Ethereum to process a million transactions per second in the layer one. So what they're doing is, what is the most efficient thing? Let's help these scalability solutions, and at the same time, let's keep improving the way that we process transactions, the way that we validate the blocks so that it's easier, it's faster, and it requires less and less from the validators, right? Because at the end of the day, base layers are, they need to compensate, they need to give incentives that are at least comparable to whatever effort the validators need to do. So the harder it is to validate something, which means usually that it's the more secure, right? So to validate something that is hard, it's because the thing is probably more secure. You're doing more verifications. You're doing more steps before saying, this transaction is good to go, right? So this will come with costs, either time, either resources, or priority fees, right?
Right.
So yeah, I think you're right.
Right, but that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So lastly, what is the direct impact of this on the projects that are built on Ethereum? So as I said, that Ethereum is more than just the chain, right? It's more of an ecosystem. So how does this impact them?
Yeah, I think, again, key criticism of Ethereum right now is scalability and costs. So people are stopping to use the chain because of that. And then when we think of where the applications are moving and where the trend is going, is that people are opting more and more to develop apps in the L2s, right? So if I want to have a more efficient ecosystem, instead of building on an L1, I will build an L2 so that I give to my users a better user experience, a better cost to transact, and et cetera, right? So I think firstly, what I see in terms of impact is that I see a shift of focus from the L1 to L2s very heavily. So I don't think it's going to be very smart for projects, at least in the short, medium term, to be developing on the L1 unless they have a very specific requirement of security, right? So if they're dealing with very large amount of monies or institutions or something like this, then it might justify for them to be in the base layer and to take advantage of the full security that Ethereum has. But if you're a consumer dApp, so if you're a dApp that is a social media dApp, a social fi app, a game, if you are a DEX that has a lot of transactions and these transactions are microtransactions, or anything that just requires constant interaction and constant publication to the blockchain, I see this shifting very heavily towards the L2s, right? And I think the other thing that also changed was the communication between Ethereum L1 and the L2s. So because of the changes in how some of the technicals of the communication between L1 and L2s changed with this upgrade, now it's easier to pass on the information. So it's more efficient for L2s and L1s to communicate and exchange information, right? So things like bridging from one chain to the other, hitting finality or withdrawing from the L2 to L1, these kind of things are becoming more efficient. And this will likely improve not only the cost of doing a bridge transaction, for example, but likely the time, right? So we have an issue right now that it takes very long for some of these L2s to reach finality and for you to really be able to withdraw funds from there or to use it in somewhere else, because they need some time to really validate that transaction is valid, right? And with this new upgrade, we also have some efficiencies coming up for these scenarios. So I see a shift from L1 to L2s, and I also see an improvement in terms of communication and also efficiency for money shifting around L1 and L2s, right? And this might also impact how the L2s interact between each other, right? So one L2 with the other and how they communicate and how do you bridge an asset from Arbitrum to Optimism in an efficient way. So we might see some improvements there as well.
Correct. That makes a lot of sense. And then last question, what are the next few steps for Ethereum? Because I know that this upgrade as well was like one of their big plans for Ethereum, right? After the merge. So what is the next step after this for Ethereum that everyone should be looking forward to?
Yeah, so when we think of the roadmap and what Ethereum is planning, I think this is an ever-evolving roadmap, so we might see changes in the future depending on what is the priority at that time, right? It will depend a lot on how things are going, what is the biggest issue right now, and what the team will prioritize, right? But I think overall, we have many steps after this one, and they have very funny names like Scourge, The Verge, The Splurge, and each one of them is focused on a different technical aspect of things. But always thinking of decentralization, thinking of efficiency, thinking of scalability, right? The one that is right outside the door, and it's the one that they will likely focus right now, is called the Scourge, right? And they focus a lot on centralization concerns, right? And there are two main things that we saw a lot in narratives for 2023 and 2022. One is MEV, which is maximal extractable value, which was initially a reward mechanism, but it ended up creating some centralized power for validators in the way they process transactions, right? So if I can order transactions in a way that I'll extract the most value out of this validation of this block, I can do this and get more rewards for the block, right? But if Ethereum was built for decentralization and it was built as well for things to be fair, right? Yep. Equalitarian, as they say, this doesn't fit. So MEV is a feature up until a certain point. So they will likely change how transactions are ordered. They will probably, they mentioned something called inclusion lists, which is pretty much specifying how to order transactions, how to process those transactions to try to counteract some of these MEV operations, right? So the centralization concerns come from MEV. And the other thing is also staking, right? So we saw in 23 a big rise of liquid staking, and players like Lido, Rocket Pool, and other competitors coming in and pretty much getting a lot of the ETH from the market and staking on their platform. And at the end of the day, when we have a single player with a lot of capital of the consensus, of the proof of stake consensus mechanism, this starts creating a concern, right? A centralization concern of, okay, what happens if we have a failure in Lido, for example? If they control 30% of all the staked ETH, how does this impact the consensus? Is that too much centralization? Do they have a lot of power in their hands? And if something goes wrong, what's the overall impact and the cascade events that could happen for the Ethereum ecosystem as a whole, right? So they have some proposals on that direction as well for how to limit the staking balance of certain protocols, and especially for liquid staking, how do you cap whatever what they can have in holdings? But again, I think this is still in discussion, because at the same time they can say, oh yeah, you're Lido, you have too much concentrated in capital. But if we're thinking that we want to be decentralized and that the code is law, this should be just natural, right? So if people want to put their capital there,
yeah,
they should be able to. And there shouldn't be a hard cap from how much they can get. So there is still a discussion in the philosophical field of things on, is this fair? Is this what the right direction? And what precedents does this set for other protocols, right? So if Ethereum can say, you cannot get any more staked ETH starting on this point, what does that mean? Is Ethereum controlling it? Are we still decentralized? So at the same time, there is a concern for the overall ecosystem. There is a question on, like, is this the right thing to do? So this is the direction that they're going next, but most of them are still open, and we'll see more updates in the next few months.
Right. Okay, well, thank you. That was it for this episode. Gio, do you have any closing thoughts?
I think this is a very exciting time to be in crypto. We're seeing a lot of new technologies, and every time that you look at something like Ethereum and Dankum and where this is going, it's always good to have a holistic view, right? So I'm starting to open my mind to other types of blockchains and other ways of doing this that counter what Ethereum does, right? So if Ethereum has scalability issues, what are the alternatives, right? So you can look at Solana, you can look at Cosmos, and look at other ecosystems to get insights on how things could develop, right? So I think this is a very exciting time. Dankum was very successful, so it's another upgrade that went very well and exactly as planned. And the next steps will be very good for mass adoption, for even creating more efficiency and more scalability for the ecosystem as a whole. So I just think it's very exciting times, and we'll definitely have more updates like this in the coming weeks.
Okay, that's it for this video, guys. That was Gio. I'll drop his Twitter links and his LinkedIn in the description box below. He also makes content in his native language on Twitter. Make sure to give him a follow. And that's it. We'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you for watching.